Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your episode for Friday, March 2nd, a big weekend in Florida, and we're going to be zeroing in on the Miami Heat a little bit here. This is your host, Matt Shook, and you can find me on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account at Locked On Pistons. You can give us a like on Facebook as well. Please do at Locked On Pistons dash Matt Shook. I've been covering this team for the past year and also been following it for my whole life, a newspaper journalist for the past 12 years or so from Springfield, Missouri, Port Huron, Michigan, and the Virgin Islands, living now in Chicago, covering the NBA for the Associated Press as well. So I know a little bit about these guys and been enjoying entertaining you guys with the daily podcast about the Detroit Pistons. We'll be looking ahead today a little bit to the games on the weekend, Friday night tonight against the Orlando Magic, and then Saturday night, the back-to-back against the Miami Heat. We're also going to be talking a little bit to David Ramil of Locked On Heat, the expert on the Miami Heat. It's the team the Pistons and Pistons fans need to be focusing on right now to get back into the playoff picture. And just a little tease, I got a big interview coming up on Monday for Monday's podcast that I'm very excited about. It's already in the can. The interview is actually done, as the kids say, the radio kids, I guess, in the can. But, well, not kids, just radio people. So looking forward to sharing that guys with you, that one with you guys on Monday. So, like I said, Pistons are in Florida on a trip that could make or break the season. Well, I guess it's more accurate to say that it could break the season. It could also give the chance for the Pistons to make the season later on. But the Pistons just 2.5 games behind the Miami Heat, who lost on Thursday night to the LA Lakers. So thanks, on Thursday night to the LA Lakers. So thanks to the Lakers for that. And after two wins on the weekend, if the Pistons can get them, Detroit would be just one game behind Miami with the season tiebreaker in hand on a 3-1 season series victory. So essentially tied is one way to look at it, since tied would actually be a win for the Pistons. I'm pretty sure I'm right about the math on all of that. So even though they're one game behind, if you're looking at the how the teams could fare the rest of the season, the Pistons, all they have to do is get tied with them and they would pass them. So one way to think about it there. Noted Pistons killer Kelly Olynyk back from injury. He returned after missing about 6 games on Thursday night, but didn't do all that much. He didn't look very good, didn't play that much, even though he did get the start on Thursday against the Lakers. Dwayne Wade continues his resurgence. He had 25 points in 26 minutes off the bench for the Heat. Hassan Whiteside really struggled in limited minutes, kind of got dominated by Julius Randle and Brooke Lopez of the Lakers, who are red hot. They've got their 4th victory of the in a row, and they since the beginning of the new year, they're like the 3rd or 4th best team in the NBA. Obviously, a team that won't make the playoffs in the Western Conference and should be tanking, but hey, I love seeing teams that maybe quote-unquote should be tanking that are going out there and winning a little bit. It's better for players like Brandon Ingram and Julius Randle to see their careers going somewhere, and obviously, the LA Lakers will have no shortage of ways to end up acquiring players in the long run, but nice to see some of those guys. Actually, if you're the Lakers and you're thinking about tanking or not tanking, this is probably a better result, because now these guys like Ingram and Randall, and I know Kyle Kuzma's struggling a little bit, but him too, and Lonzo Ball played a nice game last night. He's back in the lineup. It's better to maybe have those guys as better assets for a trade this offseason. You can get more for them as opposed to the team losing so much and tanking and turning on Coach Walton and then getting a better draft pick. So Lakers might be the one team of that whole group of quote-unquote tanking teams that might actually benefit from playing well here down the stretch. But things can turn very quickly. The Miami Heat are not playing very good right now, but they've got a day off in South Florida, their home. And as we've seen with the Pistons many times, it doesn't take much for teams to be very bad and then be very good a couple days later. So we'll see what happens. The Heat have the night off tonight while Detroit is playing in Orlando, the first of two tough days of travel that the Pistons have. The Orlando Magic, who the Pistons play tonight, they are on a 7-game losing streak right now. And that sounds really bad, and it is really bad. But they've been in close games with pretty much everyone, and a few of those teams have been tough teams as well. So I don't think that I would caution that the Orlando Magic aren't playing as bad as you might think, given their 7-game losing streak. And of course, they've got Aaron Gordon back right now. He was out for a while. Nikola Vucevic is back. I like him. He's back as well inside. Evan Fournier has been playing well lately. Their hole is point guard, which matches up with the Pistons' hole these days. So DJ Augustine is the starting point guard right now. He's kind of driving the ship for the Orlando Magic the rest of the way, which is hard to believe, especially if you're a Pistons fan. The team gave up on Elfrid Payton at the trade deadline for a second-round draft pick to Phoenix in a move that kind of baffled most people that followed the NBA, you'd think. Even though he isn't expiring right now, you'd think they'd get a little better of a return for a former top lottery pick that they've had in Orlando. But I guess you got to trust in John Hammond, the former Pistons lieutenant, must have a plan with that team. Another bright spot for them lately has been Mario Hezonja, who was picked, I believe, 5th in 2015, the same draft where Stanley Johnson went 8th. He's been playing really well lately. His first really good game was against the Pistons earlier this season when the Magic made that huge comeback almost all the way back on a Sunday early on in the season. But he's had a few more of those good games lately, and looks like that he could be a player someday. The Magic renounced his rights going forward. After this season, they didn't pick up the option that pretty much every team picks up that fourth year. The Pistons did it the night before the season with Stanley Johnson. It's just kind of a foregone conclusion that you'll pick up that fourth year. But Hezonja struggled so much in his first couple years that the Magic did not pick that up. So he could be playing in Europe next year or possibly playing for his NBA life the rest of the season. And if he wants to come back to the NBA next year, it looks like there will probably be a spot for him the way he's been playing lately and the promise that he has as a possible impact player down the road for somebody. So maybe someone for Pistons or someone else to think about going forward. But the Pistons are 2.5-point favorites. Maybe not as much as you might think, like I said, against a team that has a 7-game losing streak, but Orlando not playing that bad lately. I'd caution this is not a walkover. The Pistons have already lost one game in Orlando this season. Not the slam dunk that you might think if you look at the records, and especially with the Pistons kind of a trap game looking ahead to the biggest game of the season on Saturday. And since the biggest game of the season is coming up on Saturday, I figured it's time for us to get a little bit more acquainted, a little bit more familiar with the Miami Heat, as they might be the team in the crosshairs for the Pistons the rest of the way. So we got to study up on them a little bit. And for that, I brought in David Ramil of Locked On Heat to join us to talk about the South Beachers. So I'll have that interview here in a little bit. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And now we are being joined by David Ramil of the Locked On Heat podcast, the co-host of that show. You can find him on Twitter at DRAMIL13 and also their Locked On Heat show at Locked On Heat as well. David, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And just a note to listeners that we're taping this early on Thursday morning, and the Heat play host to the LA Lakers on Thursday night. So anything that happens in that Thursday night game, we're not going to cover. But going into that game, pretty good feeling for Heat Nation as they've been struggling lately, but had the heroics from Dwayne Wade on Tuesday night with the game-winning jumper against the Philadelphia 76ers. Is Dwayne Wade fourth quarter back, or is this kind of a one-game thing, or what are Heat fans thinking after that?
I can't speak for all of the Heat Nation, but from my own personal feelings, it's a concern to be honest with you. That it was a great game, a lot of fun, and certainly a good feeling to see Dwayne Wade playing at such a high level. But he's been in that situation a couple of times in his 6 games since his return, and he has not come up with that game-winning shot. In fact, I saw a statistic there. He actually hasn't had a game-winning shot since I think 2013. So it's been quite some time where he's had the ball in his hands and had to make that shot and hasn't really come through. As good as that feeling was, I think they're kind of relying on him a little bit too much. He's already taken over the role as the de facto closer for this team, even though he's only played, like I said, 6 games. So, he can't create his shot as easily as he once did. He doesn't have the athleticism or the explosion. He's still savvy enough to find some space there, but I don't want him relying on 20-foot jumpers if I have to. And I think that's a concern for this Heat team moving forward.
What has been the problem with the Heat lately? I mentioned they've been a little bit of a tailspin recently up until that game on Tuesday, and we'll see how they go from here. But what has been the biggest issues with this team lately?
They're just really inconsistent, to be honest with you. You know, they pride themselves on the defense, but there are moments when those things kind of fall apart for them. And their shooting has been a problem all season long. Their offense is pretty bad near the bottom of the league. They play at a really slow pace, a very deliberate one. They milk the shot clock for every last second, and then they wind up having to put a shot towards the last 5 seconds of a shot clock that may or may not fall through. And so that kind of offense tends to bog down. And if those shots fall, that's great. They hit them at a pretty decent rate overall. But again, it's such a slow pace. And if those shots don't fall, all of a sudden, what's been the trend over the last few games is that they wind up allowing a huge lead to the opponent and then wind up having to come back. And sometimes it works out for them. Sometimes it doesn't. More often than not, it hasn't. They've lost a lot of close games. So that's a problem. Another issue too, in addition to Dwayne Wade, another guy they've relied on a lot is Wayne Ellington. I mean, this is a career journeyman who's shooting at a career high level, obviously, but he's had to bail out this team on a number of occasions with his 3-point shooting. So, you know, you get down 15 points, 10 points, 12 points, something along those lines. And then all of a sudden you're going to Ellington late in the fourth quarter where he has to bail you out with these, you know, 25 foot bombs off balance. And sometimes they fall, sometimes they don't. And that's been a problem for Miami. It's not pretty. And they also don't have that superstar. The way this team is comprised is that they just have a lot of players that are pretty good that can contribute on a nightly basis. But if one of them doesn't, you know, one of them's having an off night, say a James Johnson or a Tyler Johnson who's been hurt lately, then all of a sudden you're missing a key piece. Somebody else has to step up. And sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't.
I saw the Heat up close a couple weeks ago in Chicago, and you mentioned Wayne Ellington. It might be that, I mean, he's so active offensively. He just moves the entire time he's on the court. Maybe his legs are an issue this point in the season is, you know, like you mentioned, a journeyman that might not be used to the kind of minutes that he's getting, especially Wayne Ellington kind of conjures up those Rip Hamilton thoughts for Pistons fans of a guy who is just all over the court throughout. I wonder if that might be an issue for him.
You know, he did suffer a leg injury in the last game against Philadelphia. You know, I'm not sure what his status is for tonight's game against the Lakers. I heard that he might be out and they might sit him down as a precaution. Obviously, they've got enough depth there in the backcourt with Wade back on the team. But, you know, nobody that can knock down the long ball as easily and efficiently as Ellington. You know, they're running a lot of plays for him that they used to run for Ray Allen during the two seasons he was here during the Big Three era. And again, like you pointed out, like Rip Hamilton coming off the screens, you know, constantly moving. He's in the best shape of his life. You know, he said that, you know, as part of, you know, joining the Heat, they have to get into really, really good shape. That's just something that the team has done since Pat Riley joined the team back in 95. And that's been consistent through Spoelstra's era as well. So, you know, they're in great shape. I don't know if fatigue is necessarily setting in. He hasn't claimed that it is, and he seems like he's instilled in good spirits and physically feeling well, aside from the most recent injury. But, you know, they are relying on him too much, though. So if fatigue does play a factor, and it may or may not, it could be a problem during the next 21 games of the season.
I think Miami's been an interesting team in the post-Big Three era in that Eric Spoelstra's had been anointed and rightfully so as one of the best coaches in the NBA. Of course, you got Pat Riley and the Miami Heat way there and the player development that they've been known for these last few years. I know this is kind of a loaded question, but what are some of the things, as someone who follows this team day in and day out, what are some of the things that really stand out to you as the difference between this organization and maybe your average NBA organization that maybe other fan bases don't get to see from the teams that they follow every day?
Well, it kind of sounds hokey and almost like a marketing strategy, but they really do believe in Heat culture. You know, you can call that whatever you want to, but it mirrors a lot of what San Antonio has done during the Popovich era, and that's just having a real mindset and consistency throughout the organization, from the front office to the receptionist in the lobby. Everybody has to have the same kind of attitude and you know, diligent work, always doing whatever you can to improve and maximize your abilities. And I think that's a huge part of what defines this team, is that everybody comes in there and there's a professional attitude and respect that is rampant throughout the organization. You know, they have one singular voice that represents the team. That's Eric Spoelstra. Assistant coaches can't even talk to media members or anything like that. Nobody in the front office talks to media members. Pat Riley has a yearly address that he makes to media, but other than that, it's a very singular voice, and Spoelstra is that person who speaks on behalf of the team. And so, you know, they just, everybody comes in there and they're just expected to work at a very, very high level. Even Dwayne Wade, you know, he spent 13 seasons with Miami, spent 1.5 years, obviously, in Chicago and Cleveland. He comes back. He's already been tested for body fat twice. He's already had to lose weight. And he joked about it when he joined the team that Pat Riley told him, all right, have pancakes today because it's the last time you'll be having those for a while. And that's the kind of attitude this team has. They watch what they eat. They make sure that everybody's performing at a high level. I mean, it works. Some guys in the league don't like that. They don't want to be told what to do. And it's, you know, rub them the wrong way. But others need it. A guy like James Johnson and Ellington, to some degree, you know, they were journeymen. They come into this organization and they get into much better shape than they ever have throughout their careers. And all of a sudden they're playing at a higher level than they ever have. So I think that's a big part of what defines this team.
We got the Pistons sitting in ninth place in the Eastern Conference, and Charlotte creeping up from behind. Obviously, looking at the playoff picture daily to see where they rank, according to Miami and Philadelphia and Milwaukee too. What's the mindset? It's sitting at eighth in the Eastern Conference, and as Miami is, what's the mindset of the fan base right now? Are they pretty much decided that they're going to be one of those eight teams in the playoffs, or are they keeping an eye on teams behind them, or are they looking at possibly moving up to get into the middle of the Eastern Conference pack? I mean, what is the mindset of the fan base looking at the playoffs ahead?
I think they expect to make the playoffs at the very least. You know, considering the way the team finished last year in the second half with a 30-11 record, and the fact that they've thrown as much money as they have in the offseason at guys like Kelly Olynyk, James Johnson, Dion Waiters, etc., there's an expectation that this team will make the playoffs. You know, right now they're holding on to the A seed, but a couple weeks ago they were pushing for a third seed. You know, they've lost a number of games over their last 11 or so, but they're still expecting to make this. And I think they could actually even push a little bit further if teams like, you know, Indiana, maybe even Philadelphia, if they drop off a little bit. Milwaukee lost yesterday as well. If those teams kind of stumble a little bit, Miami has a good opportunity over the next 21 games to climb a little bit higher. So as far as the fans are concerned, absolutely they expect to make the playoffs. I think it would be devastating if not, just because, again, the amount of money that was spent in the offseason and the kind of feel-good attitude that everybody had at the end of last season after having had such an incredible run, you know, a historic run, to be honest with you. You know, that was a pace that might not have been sustainable. There was expected to be some drop off from guys like Waiters because he shot at such a high level last year. But at the same time, I think everybody thought that these pieces would gel pretty easily. That hasn't always been the case. But the return of Wade, I think, also has a lot of fans buoyed. There's some high expectations that he'll be able to step up. And I know I'm not confident that he's going to be able to lead the team that way. The other night, I think, was an aberration, more the exception rather than the norm. But at the same time, I think the general fan probably sees Wade's return as a really good sign and a positive direction for this team.
Well, if you're wondering about Pistons fans, I think a decade of irrelevance has kind of beaten down the fan base a little bit, and they're pretty much penciling in at least Miami and everyone else who's not Detroit to make the Eastern Conference playoffs.
What has gone on with the Pistons lately? Because, I mean, obviously they started off pretty well. I know injuries to Reggie Jackson, who's much maligned by that fan base, right? I mean, I see a lot of Pistons fans kind of, they don't really appreciate what Jackson does. From your perspective, I'm curious because they're actually coming into Orlando, and I'm going to cover that game in a couple of days. So I'm actually tomorrow, Friday. So I'm curious if you have any insight as far as what's gone on with Detroit.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the great start. They moved Andre Drummond away from the basket a little bit into the top of the post there, and he's been a little bit of a playmaker. But that was kind of figured out by teams after a couple months of the season. Yeah. Things went to hell after Reggie Jackson went down right after Christmas there, and he's just now getting started on some lateral movement drills, and certainly not full practicing for another 10 days or so. And then Ish Smith is just, you know, he's a good backup point guard, but he's not nearly good enough to be a starting point guard. He's too small. He gets abused by guards every night. So it's turned into a bit of a problem for the Pistons, and they had a long losing streak in late November, early December. They went on another long losing streak that led to the trade, obviously, and now Blake Griffin had a little honeymoon period of four straight wins when he came in, five total without him as well. And then they dropped five of six and got the win on Wednesday night. It's interesting. They've played 12 games with Blake Griffin on the schedule, on the team. They've won the six games where they've played a team on a second half of a back-to-back, and they've lost the six games when the team was not on a second half of a back-to-back. So bad news is that they've only got a few of those games left on the rest of the schedule. It's just it's tough to throw in a guy like Blake Griffin, who has a unique skill set, something we haven't had in Detroit in many years. Well, really, I don't know, Buddha Edwards, the last guy that could score in the post consistently. But I think Stan Van Gundy is probably going to need an offseason to put this together, to figure out how to put two unique players like Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin together. And like you said, Reggie Jackson is another unique player that you got to throw into that mix in a couple weeks, hopefully, for Pistons fans. And it's just been a lot of questions with not a lot of answers. And I think the early returns on Blake Griffin, as far as his individual, what shape Blake Griffin is at this point in his career is not been as promising as maybe we were sold. I think he had a really good couple weeks for the Clippers before the trade, and then now he's kind of regressed what he maybe is at this point, which is not very positive. He's got developing his jump shot and his long range game, and that's a work in progress, and it's not been pretty so far. Right. My long answer there. But I was talking a little about Stan Van Gundy there. He had two good years in Miami, took the Heat to the Eastern Conference Finals against Detroit during the going to work era that led to the championship in 04. And then Pat Riley stepped in the next season and won the title with the team the next year. When Heat fans think back of Stan Van Gundy, or if he comes up among the fans there, and obviously we got a critical eye on him here in Detroit in year four and looking at possibly not making the playoffs for the third of those 4 years. What's his legacy in Miami? I'm trying to backtrack his career a little bit. Obviously, he's one of the, you know, good minds of the NBA around the fans around the country. But how is he thought of in Miami?
Well, he was a longtime assistant for Pat Riley with the Knicks. And so when Riley left New York to join Miami, Stan kind of tagged along there while Jeff stayed behind to lead the Knicks, obviously. So he was this guy who was a sharp contrast to Pat Riley, you know, prowling the sidelines in his Armani suits. There was frumpy Stan. So it was an interesting contrast there. And then when Pat Riley suddenly, you know, took a seat back in 2003, actually, right after they drafted Dwayne Wade, it was a couple years of a really hard time for Miami fans, because they had assembled this really good team that was going to surround Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway, and then Mourning's kidney issues started flaring up, and you know, his life was in jeopardy. Nobody knew what was going to happen with his team. And, you know, the consistency and feeling around the team start to sour pretty badly. Then Riley took a step back there. And you know, I think Heat fans were in shock. They didn't know what to expect. They had always assumed that Riley would be part of this team forever as the head coach. And sure, he stayed there as a president. And then Stan took over. And there was always the shadow of Riley looming there. Like, everybody expected Riley to take over at some point, and that was the criticism. Every time Stan had a bad game, it was like always, you know, you hear a lot of a large swath of fans saying, oh, replace him with Riley. Like, you know, Riley, it's time for you to come back down. So it was tough for him. But that first year, 03-04, Wade's rookie season, to me, and I think to a lot of Heat fans, was actually like a favorite season in all-time Heat history. Like, this team was so unexpectedly, they actually made it to the playoffs on a late season surge there. Dwayne Wade played really, really well. They had key contributions from guys like Caron Butler and Lamar Odom, and Stan was a big part of that. Like, he imbued these young players with so much confidence. A guy like Odom, who had been wasting his talents with the Clippers, he came over to Miami, played for Van Gundy, and he took his game to another level. You know, a guy like Caron Butler was able to sustain his career for so long. And even Dwayne Wade. I don't know that Dwayne Wade has the career he does without Van Gundy's leadership and mentorship. And then the next season, that all changed because obviously you trade away Caron Butler and Lamar Odom for Shaquille O'Neal, and then the expectations are heightened. You know, what can happen with Shaq? And that was when he was in his prime, coming off of the really, really successful years with the Lakers. And so there were high expectations there. And Van Gundy was able to get the most out of the team, but there was always a feeling that he was not appreciated in that locker room, that he was pushing players too far, that he never really knew how to get the most out of superstar players, particularly Shaq. And I mean, that's a lot on O'Neal, that he was so sensitive about things, that he had had such a hard time dealing with coaches in the past, you know. So I think there was a lot of issues as far as Van Gundy's tenure, but from the fan perspective, I think he's still beloved. I think he was able to get the most out of those really great teams, but you know, he ultimately fell short. And Riley was able to take over that team late in that 2005-2006 season, and he wound up guiding to the championship. So, you know, it's a short era, you know, just 2.5 seasons basically, but I think it's still remembered fondly, but ultimately, you know, not as successful as Riley's.
Well, David Ramil of Locked On Heat, thanks for joining us today here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. You got a prediction for Saturday night as the teams are going to meet at American Airlines?
Well, you know, it's tough to say. I think we're expecting bigger things out of Hassan Whiteside. All the scuttlebutt around the team is that he's going to be playing engaged at a high level. It should be an interesting matchup between him and Andre Drummond. So I expect Miami to pull out. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be a narrow win.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I hate to be a downtrodden Pistons follower right now, but the second game of a back-to-back for Pistons down in Florida is going to be a tough one, and I can't recall this group playing a lot of very good games down in Miami, so I think history has told us that it might be a problem. And then you got Kelly Olynyk, who seems to come up big every time against the Pistons. So, again, David Ramil of Locked On Heat, thanks for joining us. You should give him a follow on Twitter at DRAMIL, M-I-L, 13, and also the Locked On Heat show on Twitter as well at Locked On Heat. David, thanks again for your time.
You got it, Matt.
Big thanks once again to David Ramil of Locked On Heat for joining us, and we will wrap up how the Pistons did on their Florida trip this weekend, and also, like I said, a very special guest joining us for Monday's podcast. But you should also give a follow to the Locked On NBA Network Twitter handle at Locked On NBA Net, and give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. And thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you all again very soon.